Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mike Neff. And Neff, we got a lot to talk about, as always, because there is the second cup doubleheader of the weekend. We've also got almost a 20-minute interview coming up with Austin Cindric. Actually, over 20 minutes with Austin Cindric later in the show, which we taped last week.
It's been a race win for Austin Cindric.
Correct, which we taped last week prior to him winning at Road America, which is perfect timing. But he's also won four of the last five races in the Xfinity Series, so we get all of his take on where he stacks up against this competition. But now, if we got a lot to talk about, like I said, ton of topics. Let's start with the on-track product in Michigan. I thought Saturday's race was excellent. I thought it rivals probably the old Michigan when you could run all over the track. I think they put the PH1 down kind of in the higher lane, which is the best way to do it. If you're going to, you don't want to put it in the preferred lane because everyone's just going to run it. We had the choose cone, which we'll talk about. Awesome racing, even though Kevin Harvick dominated.
I was ecstatic. I am not going to lie. That was, I've been waiting for Michigan to give us this since they did the repave. And similar to Charlotte, it just hasn't aged. I mean, we've maybe been a groove and a half for the last couple of years. But Saturday and Sunday was old Michigan. I mean, guys were running maybe not all the way to the wall, but they were close enough to sniff it. And it gave everybody options. People could run different lanes and even different attacks of the game. I mean, guys were drifting up and coming down and drifting up. It had everything that you want out of Michigan. And even as more predictable as Sunday's race was, with Harvick pretty much dominating it, it was still entertaining. There were still guys making moves. There were still people trying things and putting themselves in situations that got sketchy. Yeah, it legitimately looked like the car was beginning to be a little hard to drive.
Yeah.
And we have not seen that with this package. So that was a beautiful thing. And I was entertained, and it's been a while since I've been entertained by this package on an intermediate / 2 mile track.
Yeah, definitely. It seemed like air actually mattered when it comes to, for instance, with like 9-10 laps to go, Kyle Busch is leading, gets by Kevin Harvick. And coming off turn four, I swear Harvick got into him live. Looking back, he didn't get into him.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
You couldn't fit a ream of paper between them. But he was probably half an inch from hitting him.
But that's a good thing, because back in the day, that's, you could drive up underneath someone, right behind someone, get them loose, and get by for the position. That's racing. We haven't seen
and
that.
There was even drafting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, we've been hearing about that with this giant spoiler package crap for 5 years, and we finally actually saw some drafting involved this weekend. If you were on the bottom and you didn't complete the pass, dudes went sailing by guys on the top side. I loved it.
Yeah, for sure. I think Michigan's kind of in the realm of Pocono where, you know, we don't need to go there twice necessarily. But if it produces races like Saturday, I'm all for doubleheaders at Michigan to give them two races. But yeah, I thought,
I want doubleheaders everywhere next year. 72 races. Let's just do doubleheaders everywhere.
That would be wild. We'll get into the doubleheader aspect here in a little bit. But I mean, Sunday's race, it seemed like clean air mattered more. For instance, Clint Bowyer, you know, virtue of Chris Buescher having to go to the rear along with 12 other drivers. Yes, 13 in all had to start from the rear, third of the field. Clint Bowyer got out in clean air, led every lap of the stage, won the stage. Once he got back in traffic, though, in the final stage,
and then managed to shoot himself in the foot.
Yeah, once he got back in the final stage,
that's what they do every time.
Once he got back in the final stage, he couldn't make it back to the front. But we got an excellent race on Saturday. Okay race yesterday, I thought, as we record on Monday. But in my opinion, I feel like Saturday's race was almost like a test session. And do you think maybe that's why the racing was better Saturday than Sunday? Because overnight and in the morning, teams could work on their cars and prep them for, you know, the same length race on Sunday?
I think it was a little both. I think you had guys, and we've seen it all year, that unload thinking the car is going to do one thing and then it does something different. And you end up having to make adjustments on it. And as a result, you have guys pitting more than they did on Sunday. I think by Sunday, everybody pretty much had their cars the way they wanted them, and unless you felt like tires were going to do a little something for you, you didn't bother pitting. And Saturday, every time you had a chance to pit, everybody outside the top like six or seven was coming in and pitting and making adjustments because they were trying to get their cars better. So I think that resulted in more guys shuffling back into the pack more and having to ride back to the front more. And I think that added to the intensity of Saturday's race, where Sunday, I think between Saturday's race and overnight, everybody had their cars about where they needed them to be. So the tires, they fell off some, but not enough to justify losing the track position. Because as you mentioned with Boyer, track position was king. And so you didn't want to risk losing that track position to make minor adjustments or to take tires. And so that's why I think Sunday's was not as compelling, because guys didn't, there wasn't an advantage to coming to pit lane like there was on Saturday.
Yeah, I second most of that. But then I think of the final caution there at the end, where Eric Almirola was going to have to pit if there wasn't a caution. He gets a lucky break. There is a caution. Him, Matt DiBenedetto, they come into the pits. And then they drive back up to, what, sixth? And DiBenedetto, I think, finished seventh or eighth. So, I mean, there was, what, 40 laps or so on their tires by that? Probably longer for the front runners. So, yeah, I don't know how much tires matter. We saw them cord, some of them cord, Saturday and yep. Sunday. But I think, I don't know, I was compelled by what I saw, definitely Saturday. And I was at least entertained Sunday.
Yeah, me too.
It was still good racing, and especially for Michigan. When you go to Michigan, you're thinking you're going to get these long, you know, stretches of green flag racing, which we did. You know, the first and second stage pretty much were caution-free both days, except for the competition caution Saturday. But I got to think, this being the second doubleheader, that the teams learned a lot from Pocono. Granted, they're two totally different tracks, but I'd imagine some of that transitioned into this week and how they approach the weekend.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's checklists involved, as there is at any time, but I think you have a different checklist when it comes to a doubleheader weekend. And again, and I know we'll talk about this later too, but that's why I'm still thinking Jimmy Johnson is the dude going to be at Dover, because I think that team is going to have him dialed in by the second race at Dover. But I agree. I think there's a different mindset on the approach to the whole weekend, and especially overnight from Saturday to Sunday when it's a doubleheader weekend.
For sure. Now, I want to talk about the Chuscone enough, because you and I were just pro Chuscone. We're big advocates of it. Last Thursday, NASCAR came out with an announcement saying it would be in play for all races going forward this year. I would imagine next year, too, and so on, except for the super speedways and road courses this year. Like I said, we're both big proponents of it. We like it. And on Friday, I mean, it got a big... It came off with a big in a big way in the truck race, because... I mean, obviously, there's chaos in the truck race, but Zane Smith went from 5th to 1st on the final restart. Granted, there was a wreck that caused that we'll get to later, too. But with like 20 laps to go on Saturday, Chase Elliott was going to restart 5th. He had the option. He was the 5th person to have an option to go high or low. The first four in front of him all went high.
Go high.
He went low. And when he went low, I think he had Denny Hamlin behind him. Maybe it was Kyle Busch. But they gave him a hell of a shove down the front stretch. And by off turn two, the 9 car was leading. Yep. That's a big turnaround from 5th to 1st.
Beautiful
and,
thing.
And it's all virtue of the Chuscone.
And not only was it leading, but held on to it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's where, again, track position is king. The only thing that I'm going to throw out that it was a negative for me, and I don't see why they can't fix this, is that it's not a cone. I understand that maybe at Bristol and Martinsville, where by the time the final guys choose, the leaders are going to be in three, that could be a thing. At Michigan, it's like 2 minutes from the time the last guy chooses before they get back around to take the green. You could have an official with a walker get all the way out there, grab the cone, and get back off the track and not have to worry about it. So I mean, again, I'm old school, short track, tie a rope to it. The guy in the infield yanks it out of the way if you want to do that. aside from a half mile track, I think any other track, you got enough time for somebody to run out there and grab a cone and get it off. Because you heard everybody talk about it. They can't see it. And not being able to see it can have a negative impact on the strategy of whether you're going high or low. We saw Kyle Busch throwing some pretty good fakes when he was making decisions. But other guys at the start-finish line were making their choice so they didn't risk running over it. And that's where I feel like I would like to see it legitimately be a cone. And other than that, I applaud NASCAR for it. I love it. I've been championing this forever, but especially since we went to the whatever the hell they call the double files, all-stars, super shootout style, whatever the hell it's called. But ever since they implemented that, they've needed this cone, and I am so happy that we finally got it.
So I think that's a very minute detail because we got it. No matter what, we got it. And that's what we want, right? That's what we want is people who cover it, people who've grown up going to local short tracks. We got the choose cone, and it puts it back in the driver's hands because now, and Chase Elliott says it perfectly, and we've known Chase to have he's been hard on himself in the past on restarts, especially at Michigan. It's up to the driver now, and if you make the wrong decision, you can't blame it really on anybody else. So I like that aspect of it, and it worked out for Chase, and he probably got a better finishing position, even though he fell back there at the end, than he would have if he restarted fifth, regularly. So, I thought that was great. And then later on with Kyle Busch, we mentioned how he got aero loose there at the end from Harvick, but he got by Harvick too from the bottom. And the top is notoriously, like I said, four drivers went to it, and essentially the fourth place driver was restarting eighth. I mean, it's notoriously known for, the high line prevailing on restarts. So it gives you options, and that's all we can ask for going forward. And I don't care if it's a box.
I cannot wait to see it at Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of places, right? So yeah, it's going to be another strategy. And thing is, though, is I don't know. I'm glad they implemented it. I mean, 2020 is a weird year in general, but adding it right before the playoffs, I don't know how I feel about that. I'm happy we got it. Don't get me wrong. But I guess this does give them time. It gives them three races because two races now at Dover because they're not running at the Super Speedway or the road course at Daytona to try it, to test it out for the playoffs, including two from this weekend. So regardless, I'm happy that it's in play.
Me too. Completely on board.
Now, Neff, the choose cone, while it didn't work sometimes for Harvick, it did work out from other times, and he dominated the weekend. Won both races, led over 57% of the laps. I did a stat on 9 straight top fives now, dating back to the first race at Pocono in that doubleheader, including 4 victories, 3 with the same car at Indy and then 2 at Michigan. I asked Harvick post-race if he's ever been in a zone like this, and he said in 2015 and 2018 he was probably as good, if not better, than this year. But he's got a 5.9 average finish. He's on par. He's rivaling Jeff Gordon's record from 98 when he won 13 times, had an average finish of 5.7. I've watched Kevin Harvick for 20 years now, and I don't know if I've ever seen him in this good of a zone.
I kind of agree, like he said, in 15 and 18 he was probably this good or better, but his pit crew wasn't. And that was the difference back then. It was why I don't think he performed as well as he could have, because they routinely shot themselves in the foot. And he routinely took it out on them, which I think had a detrimental impact on their whole organization. And I think he has aged and matured a little bit and doesn't take it out on them as much as he used to when they have a mistake. And I think that has benefited the whole organization. And I think that's why even when they do have a mistake, it's not as catastrophic as it used to be. But I'm with you. I think he and Childress are as in tune with each other as they've ever been. I mean, I feel like Rodney's making decisions before Kevin even suggests things because he's that in tune with the car and what Kevin needs. And I've said it all along. I think there's some other guys that will probably be in the mix for this thing, but it's most likely he and Hamlin. And I think right now, even though Hamlin is better off than he used to be mentally. I think he is still in his head too much. And I think that's still going to be a problem when it comes down to the nuts and bolts at the end of this thing.
And especially if Harvick keeps beating him. I mean, Harvick's ran second to Hamlin a few times, but Harvick's done it, what, two out of the last three times, I believe. And Hamlin, I guess, could have beat him at Indy if he didn't have the flat tire and pound the wall, but...
Yes and no. I think that was in Hamlin's head right there. I think Hamlin pushed it when he should have known. He may not have known, but he should have known he was going to blow that tire. Because everybody else knew he was going to blow the tire. So if he didn't know it, I put that on his whole organization for not letting him know he's going to blow it. And if he knew and he still pushed it that hard, then again, it's in his head. So I felt like Harvick was going to win at Indy one way or the other, but I don't know. But again, playoffs get here, things change. I still feel like we're setting up for the Armageddon of Kyle Busch making the playoffs with no wins, maybe winning one race in the first round, and then going to the final four and taking the championship and the whole world freaking the hell out because of it.
Yeah, because Kyle's gone now 22 races into the season without a win, his longest he's gone since his rookie season in 2005. So back to Harvick, though. The numbers from him, aside from the wins, from him to Gordon in 98 are so similar this year. 5.7 average finish then to 5.9 this year. I don't think Harvick personally has the 13 races. He could. It wouldn't surprise me to see him win half of the final 14 races. But I do see him getting to 10, which would be the first time that a driver's done that since 07 with Jimmy Johnson when he won 10. He's also on pace to possibly beat Gordon's record of 30 top 10s in a single year, which was in 07. So there's a lot on the table for Harvick, and he's so consistent. You know that once, like, I think this benefits him. Where this no qualifying, no practice might not benefit Kyle Busch and other people, I think it does benefit someone like Harvick.
I agree. And again, I mean, I think I shouldn't say that. I think that his ability to drive ill-handling cars, to drive trimmed out cars. I shouldn't say ill handling because that car was handled like it was on rails this weekend, but it's trimmed out to a point where he's got straightaway speed, but he's able to handle it through the corners where other guys, Hamlin being one of them, configured the car so that it would handle in the corners, but didn't necessarily have that straightaway speed that Harvick did. And the fact that he was able to drive through the corners with a car that was trimmed out and obviously loose. And I'll give credit to Martin Truex, too. If you watch those in-cars from people behind Truex, that was a show that he was putting on, man, because that back end was like it was running on ice. But being able to drive a car like that is what's going to let you win races more than driving cars that are set up to be tight. Just because, I mean, you know, it's the old saying, loose is fast. But loose is fast because it's trimmed out. You're not getting the drag down the straights.
Yeah, and now Harvick has four of the past five victories at Michigan have gone to Harvick, the other one being Logano. Since joining Stuart Haas in 2014, he's got 10 top fives and 14 races at the track. This has become his East Coast Phoenix. I mean, he's just so fast there every time. But with that said, and we talked about it a little bit ago, Hamlin gave him a run for his money on Sunday. I was listening to Hamlin's radio for probably the last 25 laps or so, and he kept saying how him and Truex, his teammate Martin Truex Jr., they raced each other really hard for second, and Hamlin thinks that's potentially what might have cost him the race because it allowed him less time to get to Harvick, and then once he got to Harvick, he couldn't really do anything, and then with two laps to go, both Harvick and Hamlin went in way too hard into one. And
yes, they did.
And post-race, right after they crossed the checkered flag, Hamlin came over the radio and said he wished he could have turn one and two back with two to go. Because he probably would have got by, because he came awfully close on the final lap.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that Harvick's going to have a problem.
Right.
So you're laying it out, trying to do your thing. Of course, if he knew Harvick was going to get out of shape, he could have backed it off a little and then driven by him. But, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Damn, trap position was so important, and Harvick's car was just ridiculous. And we talked about this off air. I really think it was Keselowski, if anybody had a shot at beating Harvick on Sunday. But a month ago, I would have said Harvick was going to win 13 races. Now, I'm not going to bet against that. I mean, in the past month, seeing what that team is doing has just been ridiculous. And I think that if they stay where they're at and the TRD cars don't find a little bit more speed, it's going to be Harvick's championship to lose.
And that's the thing, too, is because on a late race restart, second to last restart, I think, I think it was the last, because Almirola wasn't up there. You had Harvick, and then you had Truex, Hamlin, Kyle Busch drafting each other, and they couldn't get to Harvick. So that's scary speed out of that car. And it's undefeated, and Harvick said post-race he doesn't know if they'll run it again, if they'll retire it. Ronnie Childers was asked by Jeff Gluck post-race, and he wouldn't give any answers. Because, let's face it, you don't go to many tracks like Michigan or Indy. So I think you'll see in the playoffs, because that's a dominant car. You brought up Keselowski. After Saturday's race, I actually picked Keselowski to win on Sunday. I thought he'd finally get it done in his home track. But he had a scary incident there in the final stage, going under Ryan Blaney, his teammate. He just lost control of it. It looks like he hit the apron. He mentioned it felt like he was going 20 miles per hour quicker because he was getting a huge bump draft from Harvick down the front stretch. Scary hit. And he didn't get the job done, but in a last place finish, his first ever last place finish, it doesn't look good on paper, but he was there on Sunday. I think it would have been a battle between those two and maybe Hamlin.
I agree. I felt like, and again, we talked about this here today, that a lot of times I feel like Keselowski wins using his head, and it ends up being a strategy thing of saving tires, saving fuel, whatever it is. I mean, he can wheel it when the time comes, but he wins a lot of races without a dominant car.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly felt like their car Sunday was on par with Harvick's, and I don't think anybody else was. So it was... Which also was interesting because Saturday I felt like Kyle Busch was on par with Harvick. And Sunday it seemed like they were just off a tick somewhere. But Keselowski seemed like he had a car that could have absolutely contended and maybe beaten Harvick. But again, and you know, you talk about drivers you'd like to have drive for you and drivers you don't care if they drive for you. Keselowski's like Kurt Busch. You know you are getting 110% out of him all the time. Maybe not driving it as hard as he can, because like I said, there's times when he'll do fuel conservation and manage tires, but he is giving you everything he can in an effort to win every single race. And you never drive away from a racetrack on a Sunday thinking you got shortchanged by Keselowski's effort.
Yeah, I think right now that my championship four, and we'll talk about points here in a little bit, would be Harvick, Hamlin, Keselowski, and then that fourth spot's really up for grabs. But
Kyle Busch winning it without a win.
Possibly. I would go Blaney, though, on speed. But then he doesn't get the finishes ever, so who knows. Neff, on Saturday, John Hunter Nemechek had a bad day. You texted me saying there should be a three-wreck rule, where if you're in three wrecks, you're out of the race, essentially. Three strikes, you're out. Three cautions, three wrecks, whatever. Matt Kenseth had the same issue last week at New Hampshire. What are your thoughts on that? I want to hear a little more of your take on that.
I mean, that's a standard short track rule that if you're involved in three cautions and you're not like stopping to avoid being part of a caution, then you're parked. I mean, that's how it works. And for the most part, we saw it with Kenseth, we saw it with John Hunter this weekend. Generally, if you're involved in three cautions, you're probably used up anyway. I mean, Kenseth parked it in New Hampshire, John Hunter parked it yesterday. But at the same time, we've seen some races, especially in like trucks, where some noted drivers have been involved in five or six different cautions throughout an event, and their races are shorter. So I mean, I know that you're at the top level of racing and you shouldn't really have to have something like that. But at the same time, some days you have to help drivers avoid themselves. And if it's just that bad of a day, it might not be a bad thing to say three strikes and you're out.
That's fair. Like you said, it's standard for short tracks, local short tracks. So it's weird that we've seen it two straight weeks. We also saw it with Kenseth, I believe, at Kentucky a couple weeks ago, too. I'm not opposed to that. I don't know if it matters one way or the other, but like you said, if you're in three cautions, there's a good chance you're used up, you're not competitive, you're in the way. So I'm not opposed to that. I was just not caught off guard, but I was intrigued. I wanted to bring it up as like when you texted me that. So good insight. Now, I also want to talk about the doubleheaders, Neff, because you mentioned next year, I think sarcastically, how I have every race as doubleheader.
Slightly sarcastically.
Yeah, but when it comes to you, I never know, because you want every race to be 500 miles. Which
we're getting. And that's where I'm at. If we're going to have two-hour cup races, then let's do a doubleheader every weekend. If we go 500-mile races, then it's a different story. But right now, if we're going to keep having 150-lap races at intermediate tracks, hell yeah, let's do doubleheaders.
Yes, so this week they're 156, 312 miles. Overall, I'm a fan of the doubleheaders. You can get a lot accomplished, a lot of racing in. At Dover in a couple weeks, there's going to be two Xfinity, two cup races, a truck race, just a lot of racing. And I think it is the way of the future.
I think so. I like it from a cost-effectiveness standpoint. You know, you get teams, and again, we'll have to have no practice or qualifying so the teams don't have to bring four cars to the racetrack or three cars or whatever. But I feel like I said, if we're not going to do 500-mile races, which I feel like, as sad as it makes me, that there are going to be very few 500-mile races anymore, then I'm all for doing doubleheaders. And I'm with you. I mean, I say let's do all of them doubleheader. Doubleheader truck, doubleheader Xfinity, doubleheader cup. So we end up having three races on Saturdays. I think that'd be phenomenal. Well, but I'm with you. I think we get more value out of the race weekend. If we're doing away with practice and qualifying, it gives promoters a chance to make a little more money, as you end up selling more tickets on Saturdays than you normally do. And, you know, you're going to have to cut down your ticket price a little if you're running 500 kilometers instead of miles. But if it ends up being doubleheaders and again, I was being a little facetious about all of them, but at the same time, I don't have a problem with having 10 doubleheader weekends out of this thing. And hopefully, knock on wood, we can finally get to where we have a weekend off before the playoffs start, which I have always maintained since the chase started that we should have.
Right, and I think the positives of the doubleheader weekends far outweigh the negatives. Now, some of the positives are you get two races in the same weekend. For the teams, it cuts down on travel, you know, from going back to another place twice. Like, for instance, Pocono, for years it's always been 7-8 weeks apart. There's really no need for that, and it cuts down a trip to Pocono, to Pennsylvania, which is 8 hours from Charlotte or so. The negatives, I think, from the fan standpoint, you might see like, oh, well, I'm not going to pay, you know, however much money for a ticket when you're getting not half the action. Because I don't even think that's a valid argument, because if you get a doubleheader weekend, if you could argue me on this, but if you have a doubleheader weekend, like this weekend, we saw 624 scheduled miles of racing. Obviously, there's no fans because of the coronavirus and the pandemic we're in. And some states are, you know, some state governments are not allowing big events. Some are.
Right.
But you get more bang for your buck, I feel like. Like, I think this year, Pocono would have been one of the hottest tickets in NASCAR. I truly do.
If they're willing to... If they make it reasonably priced.
Right.
I mean, I think that's where you got to go. You know, if it's $100 for a normal cup weekend ticket and you charge $100 and that lets them get in for two races, then I think that's fair.
Right.
But if they try to give you, like I said, 500 kilometers and they charge you $100 for both, you know, for each of the races, then I think you're gonna hurt your fan base even more. But if they make it to where you're paying the same amount or close to the same amount, but you're getting two full cup races, and in conjunction with the cup races, you get an Xfinity race on that same day, then yeah, I'm all for it. I think you're giving the fans more value.
Exactly. And right now, I mean, let's face it, we need all the fans at the track that we can get once fans can get back at the track. So I think doubleheaders is honestly a way of the future. I think we're going to see more of them. It would be disappointing if we don't, I feel like. Just like with midweek races, although that's driven by ratings. And as we talked about a couple weeks ago, the ratings have not been good. Now, before we get to talk about the Xfinity and the Truck Series, we got to discuss Erik Jones, I feel like. Not returning at the 20 team next year at Joe Gibbs Racing. Personally, I feel like it's a very tough deal for Jones, who I think he's a great talent. We obviously saw it when he was very young. Not many starts in the Truck Series with Kyle Busch Motorsports. He won. He went up in 2015, running part-time Xfinity, beat Dale Earnhardt Jr., beat Denny Hamlin, beat Keselowski in his first win at Texas. Maybe this wasn't the perfect mesh at Gibbs. I don't know what's off, because he hasn't lived up to expectations, I don't think. But I think he's going to thrive elsewhere. I think he's doing really good. It's going to be, I think, Joe Logano 2.0.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I think it's going to be a Logano thing. I hope it is. I mean, I'm with you. I think Derek's got a lot of talent, and I don't know why it hasn't shown through as much as we expected it to at Gibbs. I mean, he's won races. He's been competitive.
Big races, too.
I don't know that he's been terrible. I just don't think he's been the stud that we thought he was going to be. And unfortunately, with Levine selling out, and we talked about this last week, Toyota needs a second signature team. And I think that that's where the problem lies right now, is Toyota's eggs are all in the JGR basket.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, that you had Furniture Row, then you had Levine, but they were satellites for Gibbs.
Right.
We don't have a scenario like you have with Ford or you have with Chevy, where you have two or three signature teams, and having all those eggs in the Gibbs basket, you're limited on what you can do with your talent that's coming up. And we saw Toyota lose Larson, and they're not going to lose Christopher Bell. And so when you've lost that seat, in order for them to keep everybody else happy, you've got to boot Jones. And it's unfortunate, but, I mean, that's what it is. And I'm with you. I think wherever he ends up, provided it's a decent organization, I think he's going to make Gibbs regret this decision. And I know that's foremost on his mind right now, is he wants to make them regret this decision.
Absolutely. He's got 57 top 10s in 133 starts at the cup level. Three of those starts were in 2015 when he was replacing Kyle Busch, who was injured. I don't know. It's been a tough year for him. I mean, this week, case in point, he was running top five for the majority of both races. On Sunday, had a mechanical failure with a few laps to go and dropped to 27th, costing him a ton of points. So, a lot of it, I feel like, hasn't been him. I feel like a lot of it's been mechanical or something goes on. But then there's times where he does maybe just overdrive the car and makes a mistake or whatever. I mean, so much stuff has been. Look at the last 2 years in the first round of the playoffs. He's had an early exit, and he's finished 15th and 16th in points the last 2 years. It hasn't worked out with Gibbs for whatever reason. And I don't know what that reason is. It's Truex. It's the 19, the 18, and the 20. The 11, the 18, 19, and then the 20 is just out on an island almost.
And I know that we often see that mechanicals happen, but at the same time, when mechanicals happen a lot, you start to think that it might have something to do with driving style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't really put a finger on it, but a lot of times, at least I think, if you have a driver that gets an abundance of mechanical failures chasing them, that there's a common denominator there, and it may very well be the driver. But in Eric's case, I don't know if that's the case or not. But like you said, he has mechanicals catch him quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like I said, I'm with you. I think it's just way too early to be pulling a plug on him. And I think Gibbs is going to regret it. But only time will tell.
Absolutely. And Christopher Bell was named the driver of the 20 on Monday for next year. You can't go wrong if you're going to replace a good driver with another good driver with Bell, you know, young up-and-comer. Bell's actually older than Jones. A lot of people don't realize that. But he has less experience, obviously a rookie this year. A lot of people compare him to like a Kyle Larson, a transcendent talent, which time will tell with that too. We've seen him have peaks and valleys this year with the 95 team. Again, case in point this weekend, he finished second in the opening stage on Sunday, his best stage finish thus far this year. And then he spun out later in the race with a flat tire. And he's had a lot of those issues this year. They might have been self-inflicted. Some of them have been with Jones, unfortunately. And if you're going to replace... I mean, it was... Once, like you said, once Levine announced they were shutting down, what are you going to... Are you going to lose Bell or Jones? You got to lose one of them, more than likely.
Right. And that's where I... the amount of money that Toyota has put into Christopher Bell's career, they were not letting him
walk away. But Neff, with that, Jones was the first driver they ever, Toyota TRD ever got behind, really, and brought him up the ranks. It's tough.
Well, they were Larson.
Larson.
And they screwed it up.
Right. Okay, besides Larson, Jones was the first guy they got to cup. And, yep. now he's gone. And Toyota, man, there's a problem there getting... Obviously not on a talent standpoint, but moving them, we talked about it last week, moving up the pipeline, and then they have to go elsewhere because it is so top-heavy, and you got Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin, who are three of the best in the sport.
Which of those three guys are you putting out of a ride so you can hang on to Eric Jones?
Yeah, you're not. So,
I mean, you've got two champions and the guy that's arguably one of the two best cars this year.
Yeah.
You couldn't boot any of them, and... TRD doesn't have another option, which again I think goes back on them. I don't know why they've chosen, because they spend a boatload of money on Gibbs stuff.
Yeah,
I mean a boatload, and the fact that they don't divvy that pie up a little bit more to take your pick of an organization. I mean, imagine like Roush goes to Toyota.
Yeah,
I mean, I could see that. And you have two, three more cars out of the deal, and you've got an established organization that has been on hard times for a little while, but at one point was the flagship of the sport. And I feel like if you truly want to be a dominating manufacturer in this sport, you need 6 to 8 quality teams. And right now they got 4.
Yeah. At the cup level, yes, because then we see like the Xfinity level, and just like TRD dumped all this money into, you know, the cup level, they also do to Xfinity, but so does Ford, and they've got two drivers in Xfinity. They're 1-2 in points and combined have half the wins. So I don't know. It kind of is what it is, but I want to talk about points enough. Are we done with the Bell Jones? Because I do think they, you know, Gibbs, I mean, they got a great talent with Bell, and I think he's going to do very well there.
Agreed.
Okay, now, moving right along, you know, Jones, I thought he had himself in a good position. He had one quick car, two good races going Saturday, Sunday at Michigan, but ultimately only gains 5 points on Byron for the final playoff spot. Him and Jimmy Johnson are both 26 out. Reddick's now 36 out. DeBenedetto and Clint Boyer both helped their cause this weekend. But I'm still not sure that we're not going to have at least one surprise winner. And maybe a Jimmy Johnson or someone like that that wins. So 26 points seems like a lot, but I mean, in all reality, with a doubleheader, Jones pretty much had that covered this weekend. Because he came in 31 behind.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about the points right now?
I'm still on board that I think we get 3 more winners. From outside the guys that are currently.
Well, we got 4 races, so that's...
I know.
That's, I mean,
I think you get... I think we get somebody at the road course at Daytona that we're not expecting. I think we get somebody on the Super Speedway at Daytona, and then I think Jimmy wins at Dover, one of the two races. And mm-hmm. so that's three guys. And the end result there is that somebody's out. And I feel like, I mean, I know Byron has been right there and trying like heck to give this thing away, but hasn't done it. Exactly. And then you get Bowyer, who every time shoots himself in the foot in some way, shape, or form. I picture both of those guys being on the outside looking in.
With Byron, like you said, he, I don't know how he's still on the bubble. Like, not on the bubble. Like, he's a good enough driver, good enough team, obviously, but I don't know how he's still 16th. Because out of all the drivers, it seems like he has probably the least amount of speed. Him and Ryder probably tied. Somehow he's still hanging on and advancing in the points, gaining points on these guys. So he's doing something right, I guess, for 16th. But I think regardless, whoever gets in at this point, probably an early out anyway in the playoffs. I mean, we've seen, you know, crazy runs happen like Tony Stewart in the past. But with 16 drivers, four drivers beyond the first round, I think any one of these drivers that get in are an early out.
Most likely. I mean, you never know because invariably you see one of these guys that's, I don't know, top 10, top 8 in points has something crazy happen in that first round and gets bit by it. You know, if you get somebody that's top 8 or 10 in points, but they've only got, you know, 2 or 4 playoff points, one bad race can wipe that all out. And right. that's where, I mean, you get a thing like, years ago when Kyle Busch lost out at Talladega, you know, when he was trying to be safe and ended up getting wrecked.
Yeah.
Something like that will happen to somebody. So one of these guys that ekes into the playoffs will end up making the second round just because something stupid will happen to one of the guys that you think is going to advance. But for the most part, I'm with you. The bottom four guys going into the playoffs, three of those four will probably be out after the first round.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about Xfinity because we still got a lot of topics, not a lot of time.
Let's.
Now, this race, in my opinion, at Road America, I love Road America. If you ask Mario Andretti what's the most challenging road course, he'll tell you Road America is right up there. And this race on Saturday was, I love the Xfinity Series, but it was frustrating. It ran 12 laps before Lightning. Obviously, you can't stop Mother Nature. Then it was cool to see racing in the rain. It allowed drivers to shine like Alex LeBay, Josh Balicki, DGM and BJ McLeod Motorsports battling for the lead, swapping it back and forth. Andy Lally had a really good run, finished top 5. Overall, the racing was really good. And I know you love long races, but it took over 2 hours and 56 minutes to run 45 laps. Granted, it's a 4-mile course. Last year's race was 45 minutes shorter. This one was just, ugh.
I had never problem with it. I thought it was a good length for an Xfinity race, especially when you had weather thrown in. I mean, anytime when you get weather thrown in, that adds a little bit to it. But I thought it had great elements. I love the idea of stock cars in the rain, similar to my belief that we should have all 500-mile races. I think we should run stock cars in the rain at all tracks. I don't have a problem if you go to the summer shootout at Charlotte, they run Legends cars in the rain on an oval. Yes, I understand it's a quarter mile and they're not going very fast, but you race to whatever the conditions are that you're given, and I would love to see us run in the rain no matter where we're at. That said, the fact that the Xfinity race was longer than the Cup race speaks volumes, not volumes in a good way. So I'm with you. We talked about this before we started the podcast, that it would be nice if they could figure out a way to have like a cut-through road or something so caution laps aren't as long. Because that's the thing at Road America. It's a 4-mile course. So either we have caution pace be 105 miles an hour, which I don't picture them wanting to do, or we figure out some way that they cut half the course out on the caution laps so that they don't take 6 minutes to run, because that's, like you said, they ran like 20 something laps under caution.
So 15 of the 45 laps were under caution. So I think
an hour and a half.
Yeah, I literally think it's 6 minutes under caution. So yeah, hour and a half to run 15 laps. And there should never, and I know you've harped this a lot, there should never be stage breaks at road courses. You can have the stage, but
yeah,
don't
get
throw
the
a caution.
Points all day long, but having that caution, especially if you're going to take 2 laps to run the caution.
Right.
That's my other thing. If you're going to have a 4 mile course, everybody pits on the same lap. There's no lead lap cars and in the next lap down cars. Everybody pits one time, you come back around and you go racing. There's no 2 laps, and then you come around and you get one to go to where a caution is either 3 or 4 laps long. It needs to be 2 laps total. You take the caution, you pit, and you go back to racing.
And plus, with the stage breaks, it kills the strategy. Again, just waste laps, which, like I said, I was rated by this race. Average speed of 61 miles per hour. That's slow.
We had that Sunday, too, in the cup race. I mean, you're already cutting your race down to barely over 2 hours, and then you're extending caution periods because we had to blow some more crap off the track or something. No, that doesn't work. If we're gonna cut all these laps out, stop with the caution stuff. Let's go.
But with that said, Austin Cindric got the victory. His fourth in the past 5 races. The other one was a runner-up finish to Brandon Jones. Neff, I could watch him and AJ Allmendinger go back and forth on road courses all day. It's so much fun to watch. But with 4 wins for Cindric, granted they've come on a bunch of different tracks now, well, I guess 3 different tracks because he won at Kentucky twice, has he surpassed Briscoe as the title favorite?
I'm not ready to go there yet. I know Briscoe's stumbled here a little bit the last couple races, but I still think Briscoe's the man right now. And we'll find out when we get to Daytona. But especially if you, and you talk about Dinger and Cindric going back and forth, that move that Briscoe put on them at Indy, outbreaking AJ Allmendinger. That's all that needs to be said. Chase Briscoe outbroke AJ Allmendinger. Nobody outbreaks AJ Allmendinger on a road course. So the fact that he pulled that off and won that race was phenomenal. So I'm not counting Briscoe out until he's mathematically eliminated.
I'm not counting him out either, but I will say that Phoenix is one of Briscoe's least favorite tracks, one of his worst tracks on the circuit, and as we all know, it comes down to Phoenix. And Cindric, even though Briscoe has 5 wins, and one ahead of Cindric, Cindric's shown a lot of speed this year. I think truly last year he improved a great deal from the year before, but I would say even this year, maybe the 1A, 1B, and most improved driver in Xfinity. He's just running at the front more, leading a lot of laps. And honestly, like he tells us, I'm going to hype the interview a little bit. He tells us, like, he's ready for, you think by the end of the year, he'll be ready for Cup. And he told me that for a column a few months ago, too.
I think that's fair.
And I see it. That'll be his third year in Xfinity, and he's gotten better every year. But Neff, talk about the truck race quickly, because in my opinion, another shit show. Zane Smith got the victory, restarted 5th on a green-white checkered after Grant Enfinger had a terrible restart, went down to block Austin Hill. John Hrnemacek, they all got involved in a crash. Smith passed Christian Eckes on the final lap for the win. It's a great story. But where was the caution? You texted me this Friday night. There was a wreck. A wreck on the front stretch on the green-white checkered. Enfinger's car's truck is destroyed, no caution. Inconsistency.
After we've had cautions for people breathing wrong on the wall earlier in the race,
the inconsistency continues.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I understand it a little bit. I'll cut them a.
They were fighting darkness.
Slack, because if they threw another caution, fuel mileage was really going to be a thing.
And it was getting dark.
You don't want fuel mileage because of cautions to determine a race. But at the same time, there's debris everywhere shortly beyond the start-finish line.
Right.
I mean, cars are going to be going through there at speed or close to it when they take the checkered flag. You can't... I mean, it's one thing if the accident is going into turn 3 and you let the thing play out. this accident was just past the start finish line. There's debris on the course. That was just inexcusable. And I, you know, and we go off about cautions all the time. We had another useless competition caution in the cup race this weekend. And it just...
At least we didn't have a Sunday.
Yeah, I was dumbfounded they didn't call one Sunday after heavy dew on Saturday night or something. But they didn't call one, thankfully. I don't know. And again, cautions are always subjective, but there has to be some kind of guidelines that we can all agree on so that we quit second-guessing this stuff, because somebody's going to get hurt one of these days.
Yeah, and it just added to the, like I said, shit show that the truck race was not a good race. Just like Pocono was so bad it was good, 47.7% of the race was ran under caution. The average green flag stint was 4.7 laps. Now, this one was tough to watch, too. I think out of all the series in the top three levels, not having practice, truck series has been affected the most.
I agree completely. And wait till this weekend.
We might not get a single green flag lap.
We're going to run on a course that no one has ever run a stock car on, ever. Let's just drop the green and go.
Oh, it's going to be fun. I honestly can't wait.
They're going to want 20 of them up in turn one.
It wouldn't surprise me. We saw it at the Roval pretty much the first year in cups. So, and they had practice.
Yeah, I'm saying for the trucks, they're going to watch 20 of them up in turn one.
On the first lap. Yep. Now, I want to get your take on this because Johnny Sauter was very vocal on his radio after an incident with Grant Enfinger. Teammates battling for the lead with 20 laps to go. Sauter's in a must-win situation pretty much. Now he definitely is. Going for the lead. He had won stage two. He got loose underneath Enfinger, and Tad Boyd, his spotter, is just filling him with information saying, oh, it looks like you got wrecked. All this misinformation, where clearly Sauter just got loose underneath Enfinger, and there are two drivers battling hard for the lead, for the win potentially, and unfortunately Sauter lost it. But over the radio, he came over screaming how he's, you know, my teammate's not going to effing win the championship. What are your thoughts on this?
It's the heat of the moment. We all know that Johnny is must-listen radio when he's racing.
Listen to it the entire race.
It's golden. At the same time, I hope that by the Tuesday competition meeting, things have chilled out. He's had a chance to watch the replay, and he realizes that it wasn't anything untoward by Enfinger. It was a racing thing. The spotters are so far away from where that happened that he can't tell if he got wrecked or not. And when you watch the replay enough, it was just a racing deal.
Right.
And certainly Enfinger could have cut him more slack than he did, but I don't begrudge him because this is racing. And we're not out here playing tiddlywinks. We're not out here getting participation trophies. You get one trophy at the end if you win. And it's all about winning. And we saw it on Sunday. Keselowski's going for the win against Blaney. I mean, he absolutely probably, you know, you can never say 100%, but probably would have been smart to not put himself in that position. But he doesn't know if he's going to get that position again. And he's got a run, and he's got a shot, and he took it. And the same thing with Sauter. Sauter was faster than Enfinger. I guarantee you Sauter was faster than Enfinger. Mm-hmm. But you have to make the pass. And until he makes that pass, Enfinger has every right to drive wherever he wants to. You've got to get around him. And that was what happened there, was Johnny was trying to get around him, and he didn't. And they wrecked. And that, you know, that's the way things happen sometimes. And racing's not fair. The racing gods are never fair. In the end, it all comes out in the wash. And someday, the same thing will probably happen to Enfinger. If I'm not mistaken, it may have already happened to Enfinger a few years back. That I think Johnny put him in an awkward spot that Grant ended up spinning out on. But whatever the case, I hope Johnny has taken the chance to watch the replays and figure out that it wasn't intentional. If he still feels that Enfinger's not going to win the effing championship, then that's his call. But if Johnny does something at Phoenix that causes Enfinger to not win a championship, he's got every right to lose his job.
Or before that, too.
I hope it doesn't come down to that. But I think it would.
Or in one of the opening rounds, too, one of the first two rounds of the playoffs.
Opening rounds are racing. I don't know that I'm going to hold that against him. But if it's for the championship and he screws him out of it, then he should lose his job.
Sure. Yeah, I think it was heat of the moment. But I say that, and the comments were kind of late because it was reserved on the radio for a little bit. Again, I was listening to his radio the entire race for the most part because I thought he could have won. He had the best truck there, I thought. Yep. And I want to say it was until the green flag, right, probably the lap before, where he just sounded off. And you got the Johnny Sauter of old where you get audio gold. And it was great. But I don't think he'll do anything in return. But maybe we thought that last year, too. And look, it got him a one-race suspension with Austin Hill. Granted, they weren't teammates. One other quick item, Neff, out of the truck series. Spencer Davis, full-time driver, tested positive for COVID. I think we can all hope that he gets better, that he fights the virus, and he comes back as soon as possible.
Is he in the hospital?
I don't believe so. I'm not 100%.
I don't believe so either. And I know I'm not a tinfoil hat guy, but I'm about done with COVID. We've got all of these people in the major league that are testing positive, and we're not playing baseball games because of it. But ain't a one of them going in the hospital. And I'm to a point where until they start dropping into hospitals because of having it, I'm about done with it. And I'm just going to leave it at that before I chase away half of our listeners from our podcast.
Yeah, and there's a mic drop. Moving right along then. The rest of the Thursday was a busy day. The rest of the Cubs schedule got announced Thursday morning. Rest of the schedule in general for Xfinity and trucks too. No real surprises. There were some additions at Richmond and Talladega in the fall for Xfinity. It's a big addition for Talladega because you got the Roval and Talladega in the opening round of the playoffs for Xfinity. That, watch out for that. And then the trucks have Darlington, Richmond, Kansas, and Texas added to the schedule. I'm excited about the Darlington addition.
Me too. I love trucks at Darlington. Years ago, I can't even remember when it was. I want to say it's like 08 or 09 or something. Trucks ran at Darlington, and it was like if you have a race and nobody knows about it, that a fan still show up. It was like, I don't even remember what year it was, but I got a message from our peerless leader, Thomas Bowles, on like Thursday, and he's like, hey, you going to Darlington? And I'm like, why? And he's like, the trucks are running. And I didn't even realize they were running. Went down there, the stands were packed, they put on an amazing race, and I'm psyched to have trucks back running to Darlington in the fall, and hopefully they'll stick with it whenever the schedule comes out next year. So yeah, of the additions, it's Xfinity at Daytona or at Talladega is cool, but trucks at Darlington's my favorite addition.
Probably me too, but the Talladega, Richmond's gonna be a doubleheader because Xfinity had a race scheduled there in the fall, anyways. But the Talladega race is scary. Chase Briscoe said he's scared to death of it because this could be a case where, say, you get in the big one, you could literally. Yep. Getting the big one on in the first stage, not score a single point. Well, I guess score 1 point. That's a 30, 40, 50 point swing. If a guy goes out and, you know, wins both stages and finishes like second, doesn't win the race. So that is scary. Plus having the Roval, you know, in consecutive weeks, I would be concerned. Also, Neff, on Thursday, NASCAR announced, get your math degrees out, folks, because we got an equation to solve.
For those of you that didn't take calculus in high school, you're never going to understand how the starting field is set in
NASCAR. So it changes lineup procedure, which I do think needed to happen. I think the random draws based on owner points, splitting them up 1 through 12, 13 through 24, 25 through 36, was unfair. So I think this is more fair, but the fact that... I think it is more fair, because you could get someone like, I don't know, Christopher Bell, who goes up, has a good weekend, and then 50% of the equation, I can't believe we're talking about equations, 50% of the equation is weighted by last week's finishing position. So sure, Kevin Harvick has, what, 9 straight top fives? He's the best driver this year, most consistent driver, him and Denny Hamlin. He's going to have a lot of good starting positions, I feel like. So 50% is weighted by the previous race's finishing position, 35% by team owner standings, and 15% by fastest laps from the previous race. This is very confusing. Like I said, you might need a math degree. But I think it's better than last, you know, the previous format. But then you have, like, Kevin Harvick, who said, just do a random draw 1 to 36.
Harvick, the guy that's going to start first 95% of the rest of the races, says we should have a random draw. That lets you know how dumb this is. I'm all for invert the field based on owner points. Let's go. That'll give us the best show. That'll get us the guys that are running the best this year, starting DFL on the field and having to drive through everybody. And I think it'll be phenomenal. Now we're back to one of the things that has plagued short track racing for years, is that you had guys at some tracks that qualify and basically qualify on pole, lead every lap, win all the races, win a national championship without ever passing anybody for position. You're going to have that with Harvick. I mean, Harvick, you say yourself, Harvick's like 6,050 points ahead of second place.
137, but yes.
There's no way that he's going, that 35% or whatever it is, the equation is swinging in anybody else's favor before the playoffs get here.
Which was only four races, so.
Still. You're giving the guy that's dominating in the points a better chance to dominate more in the points.
Three races, really, because there's an inverted Dover. But yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it's dumb. And I understand that you're trying to.
It's just
to
so complex.
Something, but I think it's. I mean, I think that we should have had the 16. Drawing instead of 12, so you had everybody that's eligible, currently eligible for the playoffs, having a shot. If you're not eligible for the playoffs, get yourself eligible for the playoffs. But the way they're waiting this thing out, I think you're setting it up so that the top guys don't have to work to continue to be top guys.
But with that said, like this weekend at Daytona, I mean, we could have a jumbled finishing order, and 50% is jumbled, or you know, based off of the previous race. So the first race at Dover could have an interesting lineup per se. You don't know how it's going to work, but yes, like you said, Harvick is probably going to start first, at least two of the next 4 weeks. But yeah, it's going to be something. Neff, any final thoughts before we get to predictions, where it's going to be a fun one to predict this weekend?
No, and I'm with you this weekend. We might as well just roll dice because you're going to have no idea.
All right, Neff, I am so excited for this race. And I say that now because maybe this turns out to be, it's going to turn out to be a shit show. At least, probably in all three series. I don't even know who to pick. So I guess we'll start with the Xfinity race since it's the first one to run on Saturday. I mean, I would imagine like Allmendinger, Cindric, they're going to be the front runners because Briscoe. But who you got winning?
I'm going Briscoe. I feel like I know Cindric and Dinger are going to be the favorites, but this Roval thing is in Briscoe's wheelhouse. I think Briscoe's going to be the dude.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Big limb. I'm going to go with a guy that's... No. That'd be a huge limb, right? I'm going to go with Earl Bamber, who is driving
Look
the...
Look at you!
He's driving the train. Nice. Told you I was going on a limb. I talked to him for a column that's coming out in joint with this on both on Wednesday. In the 21, he's driving for Richard Childress Racing. He's raced at Daytona 7 times on the road course.
Right.
That's a lot of experience where other people don't have. Now, granted, he has won there, which in comparison, though, like he's never been in a stock car. So I don't know. It's going to weigh itself out because he has the experience there. He's just going to have to learn how to brake harder with an Xfinity car, with a stock car. So I'll go Earl Bamber. Let's go with the truck race on Sunday, Neff. Who you got?
I got no idea. I really don't.
All right, I'll help you. I'm going to go.
Pick one and then I'll go.
I'm going to go with Brett Moffitt. I think he might be the favorite. I think he's been fairly good at road courses in the truck series. Last year, he dominated at most sport in Canada. I think Moffitt, but I honestly have no clue either.
Yeah, I don't. I just, I got nothing, man. Let's go with Ben Rhodes. Let's just throw out something
goofy. Sounds good to me. And then the main event, the cup race on Sunday afternoon after the truck race. Who you got?
Man, that is such a tough call.
I'm giving you the advantage, I feel like, because there's one driver.
Let me go first.
There's one driver that ran there in January who I think is going to be pretty good. He hasn't won this year. He's the defending champion.
Yeah, but I don't... That's not...
All right, you're not going with him, then I will. I think Kyle Busch is going to end the winless streak this weekend.
I'll let you have him, because I don't think so. I feel like the... I may be wrong, but I feel like that's going to just... not play out. Something stupid's gonna happen there.
Very well could.
And keep him out of that. I'm gonna do something that just is totally kind of wacky. I'm gonna go with Logano. We've seen Logano pretty strong at Watkins Glen. I feel like this is gonna play into that wheelhouse a little bit.
Sure. That's a good pick. He's won at Watkins Glen before. Look, I'm just excited for the weekend because I think it's going to be probably not good racing, but entertaining racing, to say the least.
I think the most laps led is going to be the pace car.
Yeah, probably. More than likely. Neff, we got Austin Sindrick coming up on the podcast. I kind of timed this perfectly because, like I said earlier, we did it last week. We did the interview last week with him before he won Road America. But I thought he was going to be the favorite going into these two races, the two road courses back-to-back for the Xfinity Series. I learned a lot, had a fun, it was a fun conversation. You asked him about wearing Joey Logano's fire suit. I thought that was interesting. He gives an update on his first race in a truck, which he was getting flipped off in practice by Matt Crafton. Good stories by Austin Sindrick. What do you think of Sindrick this year? Because I know you said you think Briscoe's still the favorite, but I think Sindrick's right there.
I think Austin has really established himself this year. I think he was an anomaly before. He was great on road courses, and he was just out there competing on ovals. But you didn't legitimately look at him and go, yeah, this guy's a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And now this year he's a threat. No matter where they unload, no matter where they're racing, he's, I'm not going to put him in favorite category yet. I know you want to, but he's a threat no matter where they unload. And I think that wasn't something I expected from him this year. I still thought he was going to have work to do, but I agree with him in his assessment that at the end of this season, he's ready to go cup racing. I don't know if he's going to, but I think he has done enough this year to legitimately earn a cup ride.
For sure. And I think he's an underrated personality, too. Had a lot of fun with this. I know Neff did as well. So let's get to our conversation with Austin Sindrick. All right, Austin. NASCAR's been all over the place the past couple months. Constant racing. But the Xfinity Series had an off week this past week. I'm curious, what were you up to in the off time?
So for over the last couple of days, I've got a garage over at GoPro Motorplex, and I've been racing and running the same kart since I was 12 years old, and oh, wow. Will Power had just come out with his new chassis, and I figured it was good timing to be able to upgrade what I've got and leave myself no excuses. So I got one of his and built it up over the weekend, and got a whole bunch of new parts from my old one, and spent the whole weekend basically outside getting sunburned, working on go-karts, and put them all together. I did a back-to-back run between the two of them, and nothing's more satisfying than tearing something down completely and firing up the first time and running no problems. So mechanic and engineer did his job, and it was fun to do. But I'm ready to go back driving real race cars.
That is cool. Now, do you get an employee discount because Power works with Penske?
Well, we know each other pretty well. You know, he's got a garage out there, and so we run together quite often. And every once in a while, my old chassis, you know, I could keep up with him and give him a run for his money when the track was right. So I wanted to make sure that he had no excuses when I was just as quick. So figured I'd get the same stuff he had.
Austin, you said you're ready to get back into a real race car. you're on a bit of a hot streak, talking about the Xfinity Series, winning three of the past four, finishing second in the other at Kansas. In your opinion, what's led to that recent success?
Honestly, I felt like it was a matter of time for our group, and I'm not saying that out of overconfidence, but we've had that speed all year. You know, if you look back at Las Vegas and a couple other races between Homestead, Atlanta, Pocono, all of those races had the potential to heed those kinds of results. So I'm just proud of my team, proud of being able to bring consistently fast race cars and be able to make the most of them. So I feel like we did that throughout the month of July, and there's really no reason why we can't continue that. So it's obviously great momentum. Obviously, been great points over the last month, and getting us into a position where we can really fight for regular season championship by the end of the month.
Now, also, we've seen that road courses definitely suit your style, but you've done better on ovals of late. I'm curious, and I'm sure a lot of our fans haven't followed your whole career, where did you come from? Because when I first saw you, you were racing in the truck race at Martinsville. I had never seen you in Legends cars or late models or anything like that. Obviously, it wasn't your first rodeo, so where did you come from, and how did you get your road course excellent?
Yeah, so I actually did start racing in Bandoleros and Legends cars, racing the summer shootout until I was about 12 years old. And I didn't stay long. You know, from there, it was kind of what was the hardest thing I could do, you know, as a 13 or 14-year-old. And USF 2000 had just lowered their age limit to 14. So I did the Skip Arbor Winter Series and won a couple races in that, which is kind of the, you know, Skip Arbor at the time had a Stars from Karting program to where that you could get a scholarship if you won the summer, if you won the shootout and that. And so that was a logical step for me, and had some success and kind of validated making that move and going from Legends cars to USF 2000 car, which is basically IndyCar's, you know, ARCA division. And you know, from going from a short wheelbase racing on quarter mile short tracks to racing a long wheelbase, low horsepower, high downforce, lightweight formula car was a huge step for me. You know, data, teammates, go to some of the biggest, you know, racetracks in the country as far as road course facilities. And then from there, I've done a lot of jumping around to spare you a lot of details. From there, I did some rallycross, ran two full seasons rallycross, had a lot of success there, and ran an IMSA. And that was kind of where I started my relationship with Ford, racing for Multimatic and factory Ford team in the what was the Intercontinental Tire Series, now the Michelin Pilot Challenge. So for me, that was kind of my start in sports car racing. And I did some more GT racing there, more endurance racing. And when I won my first race in IMSA, Ford kind of helped me get the opportunity to go run with Cunningham at Iowa in the Arca race. And actually ended up leading 30 of the last 35 laps of the race, racing with Mason Mitchell all the way to the end. And I ended up finishing fourth, but for my first stock car race, that was kind of an eye opener. From there, Austin Terrio got injured at Vegas. Brad's truck team needed a driver, and it was a great opportunity that it was really Brad's idea to put me in the truck to go run at Martinsville. And then from there, it kind of just went from one offs to my full season of stock cars really being my first season of trucks. So, like I said, it's happened really fast for me in the NASCAR ranks, and obviously I've been able to move up fairly quickly. I've learned a lot of tough lessons right in front of your eyes, and I think I've been able to learn from them and really have a great group of people built around me.
Nice.
Do you have a follow-up to that, Nuff?
Yeah, my other follow-up to that, and I mentioned this to Dustin, I was definitely going to ask you about this. When you did your debut race at Martinsville, the first time I ever met you, I see you on pit lane right before you're getting in the truck, and you're wearing Joey Logano's fire suit. And I was trying to figure out, was this something where your old man was like, you got to pay some dues before we're getting you your own fire suit? Or was yours just at the dry cleaner and you had to get a substitute?
No, it was that last minute. Was when I knew Wednesday before the Martinsville race that I was doing the race. And I mean, I'd never sat in a truck, never even seen a NASCAR truck in person. So for me, that was a big change. The funny thing, it was Halloween that day. So I was telling everyone I was Joey Logano for Halloween. Because he had run the spring race at Martinsville there before. I think he won the spring race that same year. So I was getting to be in the same truck he drove and wearing his fire suit. So and the funny thing about that weekend, you know, I was I was terrified. You know, I'd never, right. I've been to Martinsville once as a kid, but I mean, I was way over my head as far as what to do. I mean, the things that I learned from my first run in practice to the end of the, I mean, we drove to the top five by the end of the race. So right. We got in the rack, and for me, it was quite funny because I waited in first practice, kind of watched everything for a little while, and decided to go out. And Jack Kendrick, my crew chief at the time, you know, he's like, yeah, just go out and make a few laps, find someone to get behind. And Matt Crafton at the time, he just dominated right. The last couple of years in Truck Series. And so they sent me out, and I'm trying to get in line behind Crafton. So I pull out of pit road, he passes me to the inside. And I haven't even gotten to the start-finish line yet, and he's already giving me the finger. I'm like, man, I'm first class in NASCAR, and here I am, just already pissing people off. So that kind of, and I joked about it with him, you know, a couple years later when I was racing. I'm like, man, do you even remember that? He's like, yeah, I wasn't even mad. I just did it to be funny. And
that's awesome.
I felt so bad for the rest of the day. I was like, man, I'm already making these guys mad. Anyway, that's my first lap in NASCAR.
That's awesome. I don't know if I can follow that up, but you go from there, that your first day in NASCAR at the truck race, then you do a full season of trucks, obviously in 17, made the championship four, then go to Xfinity, doing the season with Roush and Penske. Didn't want to win on an oval, though, until a couple weeks ago. I know you've probably been hammered to death with this, but what's it mean to finally win on an oval?
I mean, it's a box checked. I think that's the way I look at it. I've had enough confidence for the last year or so that I know what I need out of my cars and I know what I have to ask for. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I've had to learn racing on ovals at some of the other tracks is, you know, running the high line, when to move up, when to move around. Cause you know, when you're racing on road courses, those aren't options. So you look for other things in the racetrack, you look for other things in your race car. And that was a complete shift for me, you know, whereas guys with maybe a dirt racing background, that's extremely natural. And some of the things that I maybe have as strengths or what they have to learn when they come to NASCAR. So for me, I think I was on the opposite side of the spectrum and trying to figure things out. And that's where, you know, Chase and I being teammates in trucks and at Roush and so on, it's been fun to watch, you know, what he's had to learn versus what I've had to learn because it's been polar opposites. Mm-hmm. You know, we've kind of been able to not necessarily help ourselves through it, but as far as just being able to compare and contrast and understand how to make ourselves better. You know, it's been fun to have. I mean, we've followed a lot of the same path through the NASCAR ranks. So, but overall, for me on the oval, it's a box checked. You know, it's in NASCAR, nothing matters except for winning. So I can understand that. You know, you win on road courses, you can only win on road courses. Do you win on ovals? So, like I said, we checked the box, and obviously. Our team's strong enough. I'm strong enough as a driver. There's no doubt that we continue to do it.
You must be a pretty good road course teacher because Briscoe won at the Roval with your tutelage, so he's doing pretty good with that. I'm interested. How excited were you to see them decide to do the Roval at Daytona, knowing that, at least as far as I know, you've raced there in cars which most of the other guys are going to be racing against. You have no clue what it's going to be like to race that course.
So I can look at it from two different ways. In a pessimistic way, I can look at it saying that they replaced the two racetracks that I won at last year, being Washington and Ohio. So as far as places that I'd love to go with no practice or qualifying, those two places no longer exist on the schedule this year. So I can look at it from that standpoint, or I can look at it from the standpoint that it's going to be a fun weekend for NASCAR fans. You know, it's going to be an extreme challenge for the teams to be able to understand what we need out of our race cars. You know, the banking loading is a lot different. We're going to be carrying more speeds. This is a chicane that no one's ever run before. As far as regular season drivers, I think Chase Briscoe would be the only guy that has experience there. And, you know, we've raced that GT4 race together as co-drivers a couple times. So he and I, it's not the hardest track to figure out, right. to put it bluntly. And it's like six corners, you know, adding the new chicane, it's seven sections you have to figure out. So, I feel like the field's going to be as close as they were at Indy. I feel like Indy's kind of a similar racetrack as far as the Indy road course.
Gotcha.
So I feel like the field's going to be just as tight. Obviously, AJ Allmendinger, somebody with a lot of experience at Rolex 24, and Earl Bamber. I'm sure a lot of you guys or a lot of NASCAR fans haven't heard of him, but I mean he's one of the biggest badasses there is in
right.
sports car racing. You know, winning Le Mans twice, Porsche factory driver. So I have no doubt that he's going to be on the pace. You know, he's driving for RCR, so they're going to have good equipment, good motors, and it's going to be fun to see how quickly he picks it up. And if he's there at the end of the race, I'm sure we'll be racing him for a top spot.
Cool.
But the thing that's different between Indy and Daytona is obviously the lack of practice at Daytona. So how do you feel like that could contribute to the race?
I feel like for me, it's not a big deal. if I take the race setup and preparation part of it away, you know, there's so many times I've gotten a last minute ride. I think two of the last three times I've run the Rolex 24, I've gotten a last minute ride for the race. Mm-hmm. And in those situations, you're just happy and grateful to be there. And they throw you in the car some point in practice on full fuel and old tires, and they say, go figure it out. And, you know, I felt like my job there the last couple of years is to be up to speed within three or four laps. And so I've definitely got experience just trying to get to speed up to the pace as quickly as possible. But what I'm looking forward to, because in the 24 hours, they tell you, man, save your brakes, save the splitter on the car over the curbs in the bus stop, save fuel, all these things. You're trying to save and conserve. You can't be aggressive all the time. Even the GT4 race is a four-hour race, and you have to do that somewhat. But this is a NASCAR race, man. NASCARs love curbs. I'm going to be romping the curbs, going, you know, putting tires in the dirt. It's going to be awesome. Like, it's going to be a full release of all the times I've raced at that racetrack and had to save everything. So I'm looking forward to that. So hopefully I don't rip the splitter off the thing doing it. But I'm definitely expecting, you know, Chip Wile and all the people at the DIS to have to keep filling up some ruts on the end of the bus stop.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Now, you mentioned the new chicane that they put in on the front stretch. I you know, I'm a speed guy and a racing guy, and I want to see cars go as fast as they can. And I was really looking forward to the guys trying to get woe down to turn into the infield at the end of the front stretch. Do you feel like that was necessary just with knowing how difficult it is to slow down a 3,400-pound car when you get to the end of that long straight?
I can understand the perspective. You know, I do have some strong opinions about if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I feel like the powers that be felt like there were too many risks involved as far as brakes and tires, and they've got the data to go on those decisions. So for me, it's not my job to make those decisions. It's my job to race the racetrack, and it's a fun new element. I feel like you're going to have to be braking in the banking, which will add a completely different load aspect to what I've normally dealt with there. But for me, it's just another racetrack. I mean, I've raced the rallycross track there before. You know, there's plenty of different ways to do it there. But overall, do I think it was necessary? No. Would I rather have it the other way? From a race car driver standpoint, yeah. I mean, I'd love to be going 190 miles an hour into turn one at Daytona in the stock car, having to break at the start finish line. I think that would be awesome.
To get down to 50 to make a left hand turn.
Exactly. So I would have loved that. I think there's a lot of drivers that would have loved that. But at the same point, I feel like with the risks involved, like some powers and me made the decisions.
Well, I know Neff and myself are definitely interested. I know, you know, all fans are interested too. But switching subjects, Austin, obviously you and Briscoe have done really well this year, winning 8 of 17 races. But you guys are also the only Fords in the series, in the Xfinity series. So is that a challenge, or maybe is it the opposite because you can really do your own thing?
Yeah, I think in some ways it's great because, you know, as two different organizations, we found ourselves leaning on each other, especially during practice. You know, being able to, because you don't have a teammate, that's the closest thing you have. You know, it's almost like a cousin, if you will. You know, on the super speedways, we try and work together best we can, but you know, it's difficult with only two cars. You know, I think the Ford guys do a great job of that on Sundays of trying to coordinate that. But, I definitely feel like that's one of the bigger disadvantages. But from a support standpoint, you know, I think Ford, you know, the one thing I feel like fans don't really realize coming into this season is that the nose on our cars is the same, has been the same nose since like 2012. The Ford nose had gone unchanged. The only thing that changed was the decals that were put on it. And this year we introduced a new nose, Mustang GT. You know, it looks the part. It looks like the street car that I drive. You see on the road, and there's advantages to being able to make new parts. And, you know, Toyota and Chevy have been doing that the last couple of years, and I feel like we made a gain in that area, and it was an immediate gain. You know, being able to run 1-2 in Las Vegas between the two of us, and obviously, like I said, have the success that we've had through both organizations this season. So, big kudos to those guys for being able to make gains for us, and obviously continue that support.
Now, you talk a little about the support from Ford. Ford is a company that's been built on racing, or has had their culture around racing since like the second vehicle was ever made and they started racing each other. From you as a driver, I mean, you mentioned you get to drive a Mustang, and I know some of these guys get GT40s when they win big races and stuff. So dealing with that company that knows racing and supports racing, do you feel like that's an advantage to you, that if you go to them with needs or desires, they'll listen to you because they understand what racing can do to their overall organization?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that's why they're so heavily involved in many facets of racing. And it's great to see manufacturer involvement. I think everyone knows that and loves that. You know, I know that from the sports car side of things. And Ford's been a loyal supporter of mine. And I wouldn't be at this point in my career, especially NASCAR racing, without them, like I said before. So it's really fun to deal with people that are that passionate about it. And in my career, I've been on both sides of things, but it's a great group of people that are very performance oriented, and whatever they can do, you know, that's always a thing. You know, what is it we can do more for you guys? You know, you have to sit there and think, you know, well, what is it that you can do more for me? Because there's so much that they do for our teams, and even at the Xfinity level. So very proud to represent the Blue Oval, and hopefully we can put both of those cars in the championship four and race it out for a championship.
Now, Austin, last time I spoke to you one-on-one was in May following the Charlotte race weekend, and you said you felt like you were clearly ready for Cup, or would be ready for Cup after the end of the year. Obviously, on Monday, Team Penske announced Brad's re-signing with the team. So does that change your trajectory at all, moving to Cup possibly next year?
No, I mean, it's not an unexpected thing by any means. You know, I feel like there was a lot of talk about it involving him, but I didn't see those paths very parallel as far as my career goes. So, I mean, Brad's obviously an incredible race car driver, and he's built his career at Team Penske, and he's a championship driver, and I don't really see any other home for him. So, I'm happy that he was able to, you know, solidify that and put his head down and be able to go race for a championship this year, because those guys have obviously been on it. So for me, I feel like my career path isn't much different than anyone else in my position. You know, I feel like it's easy to tie me in with Team Penske, and obviously they're a world-class organization, and they've been extremely loyal to me and supported my career up to this point. And I'd love to reward that with being able to race for a championship this year. I think we have great cars to be able to do that. And like I said before, I feel like the best thing for my career at the end of this year, I feel like maybe now, but definitely by the end of the year, I feel like I'll be ready to make that transition. And the reason why is because I want to be challenged. You know, I'm not saying if I'm in the best car, I'm going to beat the best drivers in the world. But if I'm racing against the best drivers in the world, that's how I'm going to get better. You know, I want to be challenged. I want to be challenged every lap, not just, you know, racing in the top five and being able to put good laps together. It's about fighting through an entire race, you know, longer distance races. It provides a different mentality. So those are the things that I feel like are best for my career. And, you know, being able to stay with Penske would be the best thing for me. Obviously, not just from a performance standpoint, but obviously they've been a big supporter of mine. But overall, I'm very, very motivated to do what I can on and off the track to make that possible. And like I said before, winning races is the best thing you can do for yourself in NASCAR. So I'm very focused on the weekends and whatever I can do to make that happen.
Neff, you got a final question?
One last one for me, brother. You've obviously had the pleasure of being around the Penske organization your whole life. Forget about the pressure of having to race with your dad as your boss, which he ultimately is. But what kind of pressure do you feel just knowing that you're racing for one of the premier organizations in motorsports? Forget about NASCAR, just in motorsports in general.
You know, I take it as a great deal of pride. You know, as a race car driver, you want the opportunity to have the ball in your court. And when you're stepping into a race car that comes out of that shop, you know that group has the tools and to give a race car driver what they need to go out and win races. And, you know, it shows every single racing division we have at Team Penske, whether if it's, you know, our Supercars division, our IMSA team, our IndyCar team, our NASCAR programs, we've all won races this year. So I think that says a great deal. And it starts with having the best drivers. And I know the best drivers race at Team Penske, and or at least that's what they shoot for. So for me to call myself a driver for Team Penske, it's a great deal of honor. And nothing I want to do more than to, like I said, put numbers on the board. That's what it takes. And obviously put ourselves in position to be successful by the end of the season.
Awesome. We'll get you out of here on this one. It's a fan question from @browneyedgirl12. She must be a fan of yours because you're in both her cover photo and her profile picture. But she wants to know, besides Chase Briscoe, who do you see as the biggest competition for the championship this year?
I think we've seen a lot of parity in the Xfinity Series this year. You know, between, obviously, Harrison's done a great job taking advantage of a lot of great races. And Noah's obviously run up front as well. Justin Allgaier, I feel like they're knocking on the door of a win this season. So between them, as well as Ross Chastain, you can't ever count him out. So I feel like between those guys, you know, we're racing them every weekend. You know, Brandon Jones has obviously done a great job in a couple races this season and really taking advantage. You know, he won at Phoenix. That's a championship decider. So he makes the championship four. That's a big threat. So, you know, I think there's a lot of guys this season that can get it done. And that's what's made the season really fun. You know, racing in the top five is obviously – We don't necessarily have the most competitive top 20 necessarily, like the truck series. I feel like truck series is an extremely competitive top 20. You know, if you're finishing the top 10 in the truck series this year, you're doing something. And I feel like that's not necessarily the case in our series, but the top 10 and the top five is extremely competitive. And that's been a lot of fun to have to work around and have to race the entire field in that respect. And I'm looking forward to who rises to the occasion by the end of the year.
Cool, awesome. We really appreciate your time. I know we kept you a little long, but good luck the rest of the season.
Okay, thanks, man. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, brother.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Great conversation there with Austin Cindric. I thoroughly enjoyed his story about getting flipped off by Kraft on his first ever lap of a NASCAR practice in the Truck Series at Martinsville years back. Just a classic story. I would say Cindric is probably the favorite going into this weekend's race at the Daytona Road Course. And the 22 team has been on quite the roll over the past 5-6 weeks, winning 4 out of the last 5 races. And I think they're right up there with Chase Briscoe, maybe Noah Gragson as the championship favorite in the Xfinity Series. I'm pumped after last weekend's racing in Michigan, especially in the Cup Series. I truly think the old Michigan is right on the verge of coming back. Finally, after what, 8-9 years of the track being repaved, Kevin Harvick was dominant over the weekend. But I still thought we saw quite a bit of action-packed racing on the track. But that's it for this week's show. Again, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, who you'd like to see on the show, all the good things. I cannot describe how excited I am for this weekend's race to Daytona on the road course. For me, expectations are very high. And if it's anything like the first race on the Roval in 2018, we'll have a lot to talk about next week. But until then, we out.